Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, how have the Texans' offseason moves been hitting so far, four games in? How would we rate these? And I've got the list right here. We're going to start with the most significant ones as we welcome you back in. 8 o'clock hours here, Payne and Pendergast. Oh, by the way, next segment, we had a few people weigh in on this on the text page. Completely forgot about this, and this is on us. And this may be why the Astros lost yesterday. The old Payne and Pendergast hex that has worked so well in past postseasons.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a big reason why they've made seven straight ALCSs and won a World Series in 2022.
We've won multiple Unsung Hero Awards for that.
Should have, at least.
Mostly
yeah.
created awards created by myself, and they only sit in my Google Docs. But we don't need the recognition. We just need to do what we need to do, which is use the hex. We try to be careful. There's only so much black magic that we can dole out.
Yeah.
You know, there's a limited supply. It's not like oil that just keeps popping up everywhere.
Right.
Okay, there's only so much. So today we're in a closeout situation. We will hex somebody by the end of the show.
We will.
Might have to be their opener.
Don't spoil it yet.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
yeah. We'll do it at 8:24.
All right. I know. I know. I said it might have to be.
Yeah.
That. I'm not sure. Okay.
Yeah. But that's you and I are simpatico.
Yeah. Send in your suggestions and arguments for who should be hexed today.
Yes.
Poor bastard doesn't even know it's coming.
That's it, man.
He's sleeping in his hotel. Yep. I wish I knew where it was so I could tell everybody to go pull an alarm or something. But I have no idea. But he doesn't know either.
Nope.
That his fate has already been sealed.
Yep.
Yes.
So text in. Who do you want us to hex on the Tigers? 713-572-4610. We will ultimately make the determination, but we are willing to listen to the people on this. All right, Texans offseason moves. How are they hitting so far? I said this conversation, the genesis of this was yesterday when you and I were doing a segment about Nico Collins. And at one point during the segment, it just kind of hit me. And I'm like, that was the best move they made this offseason. In an offseason where they traded for Diggs, traded for Mixon, signed Danielle Hunter, and we'll get into all those moves and how they're working out in a second. In my opinion, the best move that the Texans made this offseason was the, now at least early on, what appears to be an incredibly, incredibly reasonable three-year, $72 million extension for the most prolific and possibly the best wide receiver in the NFL so far.
Yes, 100%. I mean, that's
A-plus.
Continuing on this track, if Nico doesn't even have to perform at this same level, but if he is just this steady and reliable, including versus good defenses, then that's going to be an extreme bargain.
Oh my God.
I think that ends up being a team-initiated extension at some point.
Like a year left?
Yeah, I don't see Nico complaining about it or anything. I think it's just that, kind of like it was this first go-around, I think the Texans realized they got a good thing, and they were able to get Nico signed early before any of the other big contracts, and it ends up, yes, very much being a relative bargain.
What a great deal. A good deal for both sides, too.
Yeah,
you know, like Nico didn't have a huge body of work when they gave him that money.
Right, yeah, when you're looking at him versus Amon St. Brown or whomever else, it's he doesn't have that track record. He hasn't done it as consistently for as long.
The Diggs trade, and we actually did kind of a referendum on the Diggs trade yesterday when you asked the question, like, where are we at on the Diggs trade four weeks in? I give that a very, very solid grade, too. That's, you know, that's probably an A- or an A for me.
Well,
so
this
far.
Is the thing. This is where it's very easy for me to keep that as the number two for two reasons, actually. One is that one of the reasons that Nico has been so steady and so reliable is that, yeah, they are seeing a lot of zone coverage because there are at least two and sometimes three really threatening wide receivers teams have to worry about. And Nico is just built for, you know, hurting cover two. Like, that's he's very adept at sliding into the open and the soft spots in a defense. They'll throw to him just even when the cover two is executed, and, you know, you would only throw it to Nico because he's run the route so well and because he's got that big frame that he can reel things in. So if there were no Stephon Diggs, especially last week where there was no Tank Dell, and if there were no Stephon Diggs, you're going to get Nico bracketed a lot more. So yeah, 100% there. And then the other is my expectations were never going to be that they'll have 3,000 yard receivers. It just doesn't work that way typically even when you have really, really good talent, even have 2,000, or well, two 1,200-yard receivers, whatever it might be, that it was probably going to be one guy was going to get the lion's share, and I didn't know who it was. A lot of you guys out there predicted Nico Collins, and kudos to you, but I didn't need three guys to be on pace for 1,000 yards. I just needed it to create opportunities in specific games, and we've gotten that with Nico 3 out of 4 games.
The Danielle Hunter signing, two years, $50 million, most of it guaranteed. Where are we at on Danielle Hunter?
I'm still good with it. I think that some of the lack of sack production isn't as much about Danielle's individual performance as the defensive line as a whole, at the defensive tackle position specifically. But there are, it's not like, but neither he nor Anderson are getting a lot of hits on the quarterback.
Right.
It's one thing. They're getting close. And
they're creating clutter.
Yeah, and it gets chalked up as a pressure just because they're close to the quarterback. But I don't like the way some of these, you know, like you look at various stat services and Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter are not leading the league in pressures the way NFL Next Gen Stats says they are.
Yeah.
So the biggest thing about that signing still that I like is that you are getting a really productive guy who is putting pressure on the passer. And it's a lucrative contract, but it's only a 2-year deal. If you look at the Von Miller contract, right now the Bills are now losing Von Miller again. He hasn't been playing that much this season. He's getting about 20 snaps per game. It didn't do anything for him really last year. So this is like, and it was a 3-year deal. Mm-hmm. So that was probably way too aggressive for a guy at the time. He was 33 years old. I think it's still a realistic contract for Danielle Hunter.
Yeah.
And I do think at some point there's going to be a deluge of sacks.
Yeah, I do too. It's coming. It's coming. I'm totally cool with the Hunter signing. The Joe Mixon trade plus the contract extension.
It's weird, but by his absence, I would say that Mixon has shown that he's more valuable than Danielle Hunter right now.
Wow.
I mean, it's he's going to be the straw that stirs the drink in a lot of ways with the offense. Because they don't have a guy. Let's say even that Damian Pierce looks more like he did in his rookie year when he comes back. They don't have a bona fide backup right now that you feel like can run this offense. So Cam Akers and J.J. Taylor and whomever else, they were not nearly enough of a replacement for Joe Mixon. Maybe if they'd given a Gumbawale more carries, maybe it would have looked different. I don't know.
Yeah.
But Mixon, if he can stay healthy, and that's already a huge if. We've had two stretches of absences from him. The entire training camp now and 3 weeks without Joe Mixon after having traded for him. So based on that, I'll put him below Danielle Hunter because Danielle Hunter's actually been playing football. But if he can stay healthy the rest of the season, I think that'll be the slam dunk trade on the season.
Yeah, it's weird because your point is very valid when it comes to the availability part. It's been available for a game and a half so far, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, as we head into week 5 here, you know, what's my concern about Joe Mixon being injury prone or, you know, there's 13 games left in the season. What's my concern that he's only able to play 5 of them? It's actually lower than it might be for somebody who missed most of training camp and has already missed a couple games with an injury. I feel like the ankle injury was one of those, like, that. If a 22-year-old gets tackled the way Joe Mixon did on that play, he's missing 2 games also,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So that's not one of those injuries where I'm like, he's getting old. Now, the training camp thing is interesting because that was a quad and they, you know, and he missed almost all of training camp. And that, you know, anything soft tissue does feel like an older guy injury. And yet I feel like there was probably a lot with the Texans where they're like, look, he's played in this offense before. We actually need to get a look at Damian Pierce more than we need to get a look at Joe Mixon in this offense.
Yeah.
So and Mixon was working out every day off to the side pretty ferociously. So I am very much glass half fulling this thing. I understand it. I'm looking at it through battle red glasses right now. I'm not overly concerned about Mixon. I'm not overly concerned about Mixon being the offense's version of Jimmy Ward.
Right.
Where Jimmy Ward misses half the season and it's with 3 different injuries that are hamstrings and quads.
Yeah, the injury being a hip drop tackle scenario too was probably, you're not, theoretically, and you're not seeing that as much this year. I mean, it was really just a small window of time where the hip drop tackle was even being used in the NFL.
Yeah.
And Joe Mixon ends up being a sacrificial lamb for exactly why they shouldn't allow the hip drop tackle.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Yeah, so that does make me feel better about his ability to stay healthy for the rest of the year.
Aziz Alshire.
Alshire, Alshire, low-key, in some ways, might be the best signing of the year, even though I don't think he's going to be All-Pro or Pro Bowl or anything like that. D'Amico on his coach's show talked about that goal line stand and how, because the quarter changed, they had time to talk about it on the sideline.
That's right. Third and goal.
Yeah.
Stingley knocks the pass down. That was the last play of the third quarter.
Well,
yeah, the third quarter.
We'll have to play that later in the show. It's one of those things that I listened to late last night, and it didn't get me that excited, and now I just remembered it, and now I'm super excited about it. But I didn't tab the audio.
Yeah.
So D'Amico's talking about, they were telling the guys what to expect in that situation, and Alshire, I think, said a QB draw. It'll be a QB draw. I remember from last year playing against Jacksonville twice and scouting and everything. And D'Amico had his input and his instructions to those guys. They changed their alignment. They changed the defensive tackle's alignment and tweaked it to expect run right there.
Yeah.
And it ended up being perfect. So Alshire's veteran presence there and his ability to help guys get lined up and everything, I think it's as long as the defense really comes together, like he's going to be a big underrated part of it.
Yeah, he's been solid so far this year, man. The D'Amico Autry signing, I would say, incomplete.
Yeah, the big question for D'Amico Autry is, like, I know that his story is that he was done in by a pharmacist or that didn't tell him what he was taking or put the wrong medication in.
Yeah.
The thing I would worry about is, he's a guy that had 12 sacks in his early 30s last year. Whether he knew what he was taking was legal or not, how much of it was linked to the thing that he got pinched for this offseason?
So you're pretty worried that we might get a real janky version of D'Amico Autry?
Yeah, I don't know, man. I'm old enough to remember what Tony Mandrich looked like when he went from the NCAA, where you're allowed to take steroids, to the NFL, where they were testing for steroids.
God, he aged like 30 years.
There's a different
two seasons.
Yeah. He looked like he was a lumping mess out there.
Yes.
So, there's a little bit of that concern.
Okay.
I'll say maybe he didn't even realize he was taking something that was bad. But of course, he made it all the way through last season where you get tested multiple times.
So. Yeah, we'll see. I'm excited to get him back just to see what it looks like with him out there.
Yeah.
You know, rushing from the interior. But we can't really grade that signing yet. Other than it's an F so far because he got suspended for six games.
If they hadn't signed Daniil Hunter, remember, D'Amico Autry was your marquee free agency signing on the defensive side
of
the ball.
That's right. Yeah.
And he would have been your everyday. You would have been without the guy that you had planned being your everyday starter for 6 weeks.
Derek Barnett would be getting 55 snaps a game right now.
Yeah. Who knows? Maybe he'd be going off.
Maybe. Couple more. Two re-signings. The Kyme Fairbairn re-signing looks very, very good right now. He's been the best kicker in the NFL, missed one kick. Kicked a bunch of 50-yarders, so it's hard to give that one a bad grade. Where are we on Dalton Schultz making $12 million a year for the next
Schultz
3 years?
I'm cool with right now. I think that as the offense kind of finds itself and as they adjust to the way defenses are playing, he's come up big late in the game. Like last week, for instance, especially with not just getting the first down, but getting that much closer to the goal line. I feel good about Dalton Schultz right now. I think that was just A-okay. I don't need him to have crazy fantasy stats. And as multiple people have pointed out this morning, tight ends around the league also not. If teams are playing a lot of zone and everything, it's easier for guys in coverage to latch onto a tight end.
Yeah, Dalton Schultz didn't break out last year till week five.
Yeah.
He started the same way last year as he did this year statistically.
And I think part of that, too, was how often are you having to use the tight ends and running backs in pass protection?
Yeah.
And the offensive line has been an issue here, and they've been, especially versus blitzes, we've seen those guys line up not just on the line and having to pass protect, but the tight ends lining up in the backfield and then pass protecting before they release on their routes. And it's tough to get them involved in the passing game that way.
Yep. The only other two that I could think of, like signings that have hit the mark, you know, where they show up. Tommy Townsend, you signed him. He's been a solid enough punter so far. Mario Edwards Jr. has been a, for what it is, just a one-year, kind of
veteran
low-level signing.
Yeah, I think that it's in that same vein of lots of guys the Texans have brought in on one- or two-year contracts that might end up getting a good contract elsewhere. Maybe they re-sign him.
Mm-hmm.
The defensive tackles... it is what it is, and to some degrees, in this defense, it's really hard for those guys to anchor down versus double teams when you're also asking them to fire off the ball as fast as possible. And yet, at the same time, neither of those guys, Fadakasi or Mario Edwards, really, they're not Warren Sapp. So if they're in a defense where all you're asking is for the defensive tackle to get off the ball as fast as possible, you're going to miss out on some of the anchoring ability. But with Warren Sapp, obviously, it's the plays behind the line of scrimmage that matter. And these guys are kind of those tweener types where you're not necessarily getting the best version of either of those.
Keith from Detroit texts in. This is circling back over to the Astros. You can use whatever type of... So this is somebody from Detroit listening to the show.
Mm.
You can use whatever type of hex you want. What A.J. Hinch is doing with this bullpen is voodoo. Blackwood magic, if you will. Try what you will. This series is over.
Over? Oh, Vukacic coming from a Detroit sports fan.
Detroit to the divisional round. We came into this series with 13 postseason at-bats total on the team. LOL. How embarrassing for the Strohs.
Ah, no.
Maybe next year.
Embarrassing. All right, listen, big talker. Is that a... He's channeling or invoking... This is a guy that hasn't watched baseball for the last decade or so.
Dude, you won one game. It's not a one-game wild card.
The series is over. I'll tell you about various series that have been over that the Astros then won, or the Astros themselves. When they were the best team in baseball, the World Series looked all but over, and the Astros were going to clinch it. And the Nationals came back. I can take this from both sides.
Yeah.
Is that Stan Van Gundy? I think that's Stan Van Gundy. If it's a stupid take that was texted into a phone, that's definitely Stan Van Gundy.
Just says Keith.
Okay.
I started hearing from Minnesota fans yesterday after the Astros lost.
Mm-hmm.
Getting tweets.
Oh really?
From,
oh really?
Tweets with a box of Kleenex.
Like claiming victory after
like
one.
Ooh, one more loss and you're with the Twins in Cancun. And
they
I haven't said anything.
Their lesson, did they?
Haven't said anything. I'm just going to lay low. I'm not going to reply. What I reply after one game? The series isn't over yet.
No. It's kind of comical at this point when teams that just know nothing of recent success all of a sudden act like they're going to tell you how it is.
I've already got my response loaded up in case the Astros do lose this series to the Twins fan. I'm like, this is why I was so disappointed that you guys were such trash at the end of the year, because otherwise we would have been playing you in the wild card round, and we would have for sure moved on to the next round.
Listen, Detroit Tigers fan, that you know nothing of our track record, undefeated success of putting a hex on somebody.
Yeah.
Because you haven't really followed baseball all that much.
That's right.
So
anybody follows baseball.
I'll forgive you that. But for the most part, Detroit Tigers fans, we pretty much look at people like you the way a lion might look at an antelope who put up a good fight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he had spirit, that one.
Cute.
Yes, it was cute.
Cute little
animal. It was
cute
the way he did that.
You're cuddly.
Yes.
You're almost stuffed. You will be soon.
So I'll send you a nice gift basket or something, Detroit Tigers fan.
All right, so let's do it. Let's hex a tiger in the next segment.
Next segment already.
Next segment, so get ready.
It's a lot of responsibility.
Get ready. I know, but we got to do it.
I always feel kind of emotionally drained after we put the hex on somebody. Okay. A little bit of my life force drains from me.
You got another hour and a half after we put the hex on somebody.
I'm going to go drain my life force on that dude's wife.
Get your mind right. All right, text in 713-572-4610. We hex a tiger coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Yeah, this looks wild, man. Like, the NFL is crazy. Like, 2 weeks ago, the Ravens were teetering on the brink. I saw topics like, could the Ravens start 0-5 after they lost to the Raiders at home in week two? And now, literally 2 weeks later, the topic that they're debating on TV is, are the Ravens the best team in the NFL? Because they had one huge, they had a huge win over the Bills on Sunday Night Football, and Derrick Henry went bananas. And it just goes to show you, that's like why the Minnesota loss in week three, like everybody's like, oh, the sky is falling and this and that. If the Texans come to NRG Stadium on Sunday and they're able to beat the Bills in, I'm not saying beat them 47-10 or anything like that, but if they beat the Bills and they're clearly the better team out there, these are the topics they're going to be talking about with the Texans on Monday and Tuesday this week.
Right.
And we're 2 weeks removed from them losing 34-7. A lot of people don't, I don't think.
There's a lot
of people that overreact to this stuff.
We're all prisoners to the moment. No, we all do it, Sean. The Bills, it's easier in hindsight after they take a shellacking from the Ravens to look back and remember, oh, yeah, weeks two and three, they looked really impressive, but it was versus bad football teams.
Yeah.
And destroying a bad football team doesn't always mean that you match up well against the better teams in the league. So I'm not sitting here painting out the Texans like they're some unstoppable force or anything. Yeah, the Ravens themselves were 0-2, and it looked like, oh boy, what a bust.
That's my point. It's about the narratives. Like when they were 0-2, the very caption on the TV that I'm looking at right now was, could the Ravens start 0-5?
Right, right.
Because they played the Cowboys and they play the Bills, and I don't know who they play this week. Could they start 0-5? It's literally 2 weeks later, and the topic is, are the Ravens the best team in the NFL?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like, that's, it's just, I'm not complaining. It's remarkable to me, like, how quickly in the NFL, like, things, like, the narratives just shift so fast, you know? And so the Texans have an opportunity if we want some good narratives coming in a week from now.
Give me narrative.
Give me narrative.
I'm a narrative junkie.
All right, who are we hexing here, man?
But the fun narrative will be Josh Allen versus C.J. Stroud.
Yes.
If Josh Allen, who threw, I don't think he's thrown a pick yet this year, but he was really damn close a couple times in that game.
Wow, that's
the
shocking.
Ravens.
Yeah, thrown a pick yet this year.
So, well, I mean, it's a different Josh Allen than the one we saw in the playoffs a few years back.
But even the last few years, he's still thrown a lot of picks for a good quarterback, you know?
But that's been the story of him this year. I mean, he's just been a more professional quarterback.
Yeah.
But he still does, including in that Ravens game. I mean, like, he can still hurt you with his feet.
And he had a couple would-be picks in that game. He had a couple pick-worthy throws.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Yeah.
So, the hex, right?
The hex.
Getting down to the hex.
We're hexing. We're hexing, yeah. So, so text in 713-572-4610 if you want to weigh in on who we should hex. Seth and I have been doing this since the 2021 World Series against the Braves. And we can't help it that the Astros didn't win that World Series. And I don't have the data in front of me. We were remarkably effective in hexing certain Braves who would get errors or go 0-for-5 with a bunch of strikeouts or get shellacked if you were a pitcher. So we kept doing it throughout the last couple postseasons judiciously, because there's only so much black magic to throw around out
there.
That's right. But today, it's an elimination game. We've got to hex somebody.
So my first thought was Tyler Holton, the opener.
I'm right there with you.
Who's typically not going to go more than, you know, he'll go into the third inning at times. But, boy, just jumping right on him right up the front. Usually he's one inning, one and a third innings or so. But are we wasting too much black magic on one person who might be out there for one inning?
No, and here's why.
Okay.
There's two reasons. One, I'm looking at their lineup. I don't know that there's a hitter that's worthy of hexing. They have numbers as if they've been hexed all year.
I know.
So I feel like using it on a hitter would be a waste.
Yeah.
I feel too, and I think it was Ocho who texted this in earlier, the Astros getting off to a fast start in this game. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like getting out to a fast start, getting a lead. It feels like at times during the season when they don't get leads, that's when they kind of pucker up and have these 1-for-14 runner in scoring position. Now, yesterday, they were 2-for-7 with runners in scoring position, but only one of those two hits was for an RBI, and they only had, you know, the big number there is 7. There were only 7 at-bats they had with guys in scoring position the entire game. I think a fast start is key. I think you get a fast start, you get some confidence, and I think that can carry over to a Game 3 as well, where it's like, okay, we straightened some things out here, because Game 3 for the Tigers is probably going to be another bullpen-ish game.
Yeah.
So I think the need for a fast start and the fact that I feel like we would be wasting a hex on any of these 9 losers they're trotting out there in their everyday lineup, I'm with you. Tyler Holton would
Tyler
be it for
Holton.
Me.
Sorry about it, buddy.
Tyler Holton.
He doesn't even know it. He's probably still asleep right now.
Do we want to take any suggestions before we officially put the hex
on? Yeah, did anybody? I think Tyler Holton was the only suggestion I saw from
anybody. Some people saying A.J. Hinch. We don't hex the managers. It's a player thing.
Yeah, A.J. Hinch.
I wish him all the luck. Here's some of the... someone says hex the whole damn team. Sir, that's not how it works. We can't hex 25, 26, 27 people.
No, we've explained this over and over again. People get so damn greedy this. Acting like we can just dole it out.
Yeah.
There's no... what was the economic term that we learned last week about quantitative easing? There's no quantitative easing here. We live in a world where the hex was worth like 3 pennies on the dollar.
Yep.
We can't do this.
Mm-mm.
There's no quantitative easing with black magic. Tyler Holton, I hex you. I damn you to baseball hell today. I damn you to a 5-run deficit exiting the first inning. I'm sorry.
It is done.
I'm sure you're a decent fella.
He's done.
I'm sure you're not one of the people that ran over to Dan Campbell's house to harass his daughter when she was home alone after they lost in the playoffs.
Yeah, he had to move.
Yeah. I can't say with certainty that Tyler Holton was one of those people that stalked Dan Campbell's family at their house. But yeah, I don't know for sure that he wasn't.
Right.
But he probably doesn't deserve this fate because he probably didn't storm Dan Campbell's house. But that's what happened to him. He got the hex.
Yep.
Yeah.
AJ Hinch is the only one getting suggested on here. Someone says you should always hex the starting pitcher. Again, it's a weird thing with the hex, man, because you can get a little too greedy about focusing on one position or one person, too. You got to spread it around a little bit. People don't understand. The hex is very nuanced.
Yeah.
It's not a simple thing where you can just go, well, just hex the starting pitcher every time. The gods like a little creativity. The gods like when you spread it around a little bit. We have yet to hex anybody this postseason. Today, it's desperate times call for desperate measures. The Astros need a big first and or second inning to get a big lead in this game. There is only one person that is worth hexing today, and his name is Tyler Holton. Suggestion box.
That's
closed.
Right. That's it. Tyler Holton has been hexed.
Tyler Holton. Give it
he
to me again,
He doesn't know the
Ben.
Vast history.
Hit him one more time with the explosion, yeah.
They go take a look at Aaron Judge's playoff stats and ask whether or not the hex is effective.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Good night.
Taking a guy, the biggest, strongest guy in baseball, turned into a withering fool and mess because of the Payne and Pendergast hex.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Someone's saying, really hate to do it, AJ Hinch. This is the first time I've ever seen a manager gets so much targeting for the hex from people.
Yeah, I guess for...
I think it's because they can't name any other Tigers, honestly.
The decisions, that would be interesting. If we hex the manager, I don't think we hex the manager at all.
We never have. It's usually the opponent has teams we know, or has players we... The opponent has players we know on the team.
And we've never used it outside of the postseason, right?
No. Mm-hmm. No, should we?
No. Dude, okay. This is like almost like we've got some awesome drug, but there's only so many of it.
Yeah.
We're living in an apocalyptic world, and I've got the only penicillin. And it's kind of like, listen, I see you've got a gaping wound on your leg, but basically, you do nothing for the tribe.
Right.
Okay, so sorry. We're not going to... I can't use the penicillin on you.
Yep. It's like the Mackinac peaches. They're only good for 4 weeks out of the year.
That's right.
Man. Yep. That's what the hex is good for.
That's a lot of people get excited about pumpkin spice lattes and whatnot come autumn. Not this guy. I get excited for the hex. I get excited for destroying people's lives, embarrassing them in front of their friends and family, making them look overpaid. That's what sports are all about,
Absolutely.
Baby.
Absolutely. It's the reason to wake up in the morning. If we didn't have that, what would we do?
That Tigers fan is mad at me now, and he keeps trying to offend me by saying, oh, yeah, real professional. I'm like, we're putting a hex on Tyler Holton. You
real
think a shot at my professionalism?
It's
going to be like, oh, dear. Oh, I'm going to go. I have to write some correspondence to my journalism professors from college to ask whether I'd be a professional or not.
Well, he's listening.
Listen, buddy. Yeah. This is what I'm also going to wish upon you. Go die.
There it is.
And I mean that. It's not sarcastic or an exaggeration. No. I really want you to die in traffic today. I really want it to happen. Okay? So
don't
you think I'm worried about my professionalism? You future dead person.
In traffic.
Yeah.
In traffic.
Like
rarely do you specify the manner of death.
People think that when I'm wishing death upon people that they still think I'm exaggerating even when I say I'm serious. I'm like, oh, no. I would like you to die through nothing that I can be tied to. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, he's all the way up in Detroit.
I'm old enough now.
Now, this guy gets hit by a bus. That's going to be awfully
suspicious.
Look,
there's been times in my life, I'm old enough now, Sean, that certain people have died where I'm kind of like, That's one less thing I have to worry about.
That's true.
All right. You know what? Yeah. Shame for... he was going to die eventually, and it's more convenient for me
than
he died now.
Right.
Yeah.
One less Christmas card.
Why do we walk around acting like we're not all going to die? I mean, it's the most infantile, puerile thing there is. Like,
you're right.
Oh, no.
We really should walk around all day talking about that.
I wish death upon somebody. It's going to happen anyway.
No, you're right. You're going
to
be...
But this guy in Detroit, I want him to die in a car accident today. I really do. I do. Not Tyler. Not Holton. I don't want him to die. I want him to die on the mound.
Yeah, yeah.
Metaphorically.
Metaphorically.
The guy in Detroit I want dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, if you had to pick one, the guy in Detroit in a car or Tyler Holton giving up six runs in the first two innings today.
Hold on a second. I got to be sure I'm professional about this. So always striving for professionalism.
Indeed.
You know?
Yeah, for sure.
I guess I would. I will grant the guy in Detroit his life today if I have to make the decision so Tyler Holton can die on the mound.
Yeah, because then you're doing it for... If you wish that guy death in a traffic accident, that's a little selfish if it were to replace the hex.
Right.
You got to do the hex for Houston. You're a Houston guy, yeah. So, okay, I just wanted to hear you say that. I didn't want to steer you one way or the other.
So, Tyler Holton, we hex you.
Yeah.
We're sorry about your imminent loss.
Seth has a private... Not even private, a very public, but one person wish on this text.
Yeah, I don't know who he is though, so there's no way for me to like find out and follow up or anything. If he dies today,
hey,
I hope he has time to. I hope he dies slow enough that he can realize. Oh crap!
And you die,
Houston Sports Radio
734 guy. Can you update us? That would be great.
It's going to be the most cryptic thing ever for like the paramedic on the scene. His wife's going to ask him what this guy's last words were, and he's going to be like, "He said it was Seth and Sean's fault. Does he know it's Seth and Sean? Does he know them? I don't know if he knows them or not."
Text message. How about the guy in Detroit dies after choking on the chips and dip when Tyler Holton gives up five runs in the first inning? Yes. Kill them both.
Two birds with one black magic stone.
Kill them both. All right.
Two birds with one repurposed Dungeons and Dragons die that we use on this.
Yeah. Have the Texans basically clinched a playoff spot already? I will explain coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, 3-1 on the season, the Texans are. They are the currently the 2 seed in the AFC. So just keep taking care of your business, Texans, and take care of your business this weekend. I saw this. Nick Wright tweeted this out early this week. And this got me kind of excited about where the Texans are right now. Now,
it's not popular with a lot of Texans fans right now. Nick Wright isn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
He compared C.J. Stroud to Gardner Minshew.
He did.
I don't know. I didn't watch the actual clip.
In what context?
I don't know. I didn't. I chose
Nick's
not to look
dumb.
At the context.
That's
I know.
Dumb.
He may have said like that's who he is so far. Or so I don't know.
That's weird because Nick really likes CJ from everything I've
seen. Well, I have zero idea what the context was or anything. But I know the Texans fans were upset about it.
How about this for a number? How valuable is a division lead after 4 weeks in the NFL? Okay. Texans lead the AFC South.
The very fact that you're asking me this tells me that it's more convincing and matters more than you might think.
I was shocked by this number, to be honest with you.
Is it 85% of the time they end up winning the division?
It's not that high, but you can see where I'm going with this, obviously.
Yeah.
Turns out pretty damn valuable. Since 2016, the division leader in week 4 wins the division 68% of the time and makes the playoffs 77% of the time.
Okay. That doesn't surprise me that much because after 4 games, it's enough of a sample size that, 68% is not overwhelming. But, yeah, like over 4 games, on average, the better teams are going to have a better record than the other teams. Yeah.
I'll point out the Texans were in the 32% last year.
Uh-huh.
They were not leading the division.
Right. So. It's not a vastly overwhelming how do you fight back from this stat, but it makes sense.
Do you feel 68% confident the Texans are going to win this division?
I feel better than 68%. I just don't. Anthony Richardson's going to get injured again and or also continue to be a bad quarterback. He's going to have some big highlight reel moments if he's healthy, and they'll win some games. But they're just not going to be able to stack up wins with him at quarterback. I don't think Joe Flacco has a shelf life just like he did last year. And I think Trevor Lawrence is lost right now. The locker room... According to Jordan Schultz, the locker room...
Did you saw that same clip I did?
Jordan Schultz said that the guys in the locker room in Jacksonville, or at least that there are multiple veterans who aren't so hot on Doug Peterson right now. And then I guess the Titans are the one wild card where I wouldn't be surprised if they end up being way better than they looked in the first few games of the year.
Who's that?
The Titans.
The Titans?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I always forget Will Levis because he's going to be so forgettable in the annals of NFL history because he wasn't like a first-round bust or anything. But, yeah, they've got either Mason Rudolph or Will Levis. So, no, I would put it honestly at, like, Even despite the Texans not firing on all cylinders yet and questions about just what they are as a football team, personally, it feels about 85% that they'll win the division.
I predicted 11-6.
Yeah.
How should I feel about that right now? Do they feel like an 11-6 team to you? They were 10-7 last year. I feel good. I feel okay about 11-6 right now.
I feel very good about it just by virtue of the fact that they are 3-1 right now.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
I mean, that isn't, like, not even saying that says, because they haven't played like a 3-1 team necessarily.
Yeah.
But just getting that head start matters a lot when it comes to overall record. Like their odds of winning, their over under after week two went up there. I think they were at 10.5 wins already.
After 2 weeks?
After starting off 2-0, yeah.
That makes sense.
They'd started off the season at 9.5 wins.
That makes sense. Diana Rossini of The Athletic does her little notebook thingy here, and she was talking about Josh Allen and Buffalo. And this is after 3 games she said this. So this is last week's. It's only 3 games, and the Bills know you don't win Super Bowls in September. She had this quote. A great head coach once told me, quote, success is like a martini. It relaxes you, and that's when you can get into trouble, end quote. Got me thinking, like, which head coach gave her that quote? Success is like a martini. It relaxes you. And then, hang on, let me pull it up again.
Who's the drunkest head coach?
Well, that's how I got
like
my
back in the day when guys used to, you know, Bear Bryant used to sip on whiskey in the office. It used to be a lot more common.
Yeah. I was able to come up with more college head coaches that maybe she was talking to.
Yeah.
Like the list I came up with when I saw this quote yesterday. Well, the two NFL coaches I came up with right away, Kyle Shanahan. Mm-hmm. Remember how Kyle Shanahan at Media Day this past Super Bowl sounded like he had been drinking
all
day?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think it could be Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah, we're all worried about people are like, oh, these coordinators are doing interviews the week of the Super Bowl. How could you? Meanwhile, Shanahan's drunk at the podium.
Yeah, Shanahan.
How like, they really he, appeared like
the
it.
Foam's melting from the alcohol in his breath. And Rex Ryan was the other one.
Yeah. I don't feel like Rex Ryan gets relaxed when he drinks, though. I feel like he would be, I feel like Rex Ryan's ready to go storm the quad, you know, like or streak the quad.
Yeah. The college coaches.
He's definitely not a martini guy.
No, for sure. Text in, who could, oh, someone, they're already texting, Urban Meyer.
Oh.
I don't know that Urban's a big drinker. I think Urban is very handsy. You know what I mean?
To his credit, he wasn't being handsy. He was just accepting of the grinding.
Okay.
Right? Did he have his hand on that young, on that lady?
Yeah, maybe.
I can't remember.
Maybe, yeah. He was definitely something going on there.
Yeah, yeah.
The college coaches.
But what about his health issues, Sean?
Oh, that's right. that's right.
How could he drink martinis when he's got these health issues?
Oh, yeah, all that stress that he was experiencing once Tim Tebow wasn't his quarterback anymore. College coaches. Steve Sarkisian.
Oh, yeah.
Who I believe is he's a recovering alcoholic.
Right, right. So, yeah, but he would say, it's success is like a martini. You have a little bit of it, and then all of a sudden you're up in front of a booster.
Bada boom, bada bing. Yeah, yeah. That's how he got fired at USC, right? Yeah. Yeah. He got up in front of a bunch of alums saying drunk things. Dana Holgorsen likes an occasional drink.
Yeah, that's true. Not a martini guy, though, either.
No, yeah, not that I know of. Not that I know of. How about Mike Price? Remember him?
Yeah, Mike Price, Roll Tide.
Yeah. Mm. It's rolling, baby.
Hey, wasn't Bill O'Brien supposed to be on that staff? Oh, no. I was thinking of George O'Leary.
George O'Leary. Yeah.
Bill O'Brien was supposed to be on George O'Leary's staff
at
Notre Dame.
Yeah.
And he got, what do you say? They took a private jet to South Bend.
He tells the story great.
Yeah.
He told me this story one time off air after he came to Little Woodrow's to talk to me and Ted and Rich and John McClain. And he said, he George O'Leary takes the job, does the press conference. Everything's rah-rah, cheer for old Notre Dame. O'Leary calls up O'Brien and the DC from Georgia Tech says, get on up here to South Bend. We got to start recruiting. Notre Dame sends the private jet, picks up O'Brien and the other DC. They fly up to South Bend. They start cracking on recruiting, man. We're going to rebuild this program. By Thursday, O'Leary's fired because of resume issues. And O'Brien says, flew up there on a private jet, flew back to Atlanta, C group on Southwest. It's a great story.
Gary Moeller was one of the all-time coaches. So the police reports were that one night when he was the head coach at Michigan, he banged drink glasses so hard on a restaurant table that he broke them. He sang with the band and stumbled badly as he tried to dance with reluctant strangers. And then he And then he drove home, and I think, didn't he get pulled over going like 12 miles an hour or
didn't
something?
Didn't he say something like, take me away, boys, or something like that to the cops?
Take me to jail. It was a hell of an evening he had.
Gary Moeller.
Okay, he punched Southfield police officer Vincent Maviglia several times in the chest.
Well, that's not a take me away.
Prompting his arrest on charges of disorderly conduct. Repeatedly jabbed his fist and finger in the chest of the restaurant night manager who was trying to get Moeller to switch from booze to coffee. Latched onto the sports jacket of a restaurant patron upset.
This guy's a head coach at Michigan when this is going on.
Yes. Oh, my God.
Yeah, there's way more drunks in college than there are in the NFL.
He was my defensive coordinator one year.
I was just about to ask you. You crossed paths with him at one point, huh?
He was. He gave awesome pep talks, but didn't know a damn thing about
NFL. Did he punch you in the chest while he was doing
it? We'd be sitting in meetings sometimes, and he'd be like, oh, gosh, it was... Well, I hear they're in their goal line package, and we're looking at it like, no, they've just got an extra tight end. They've got three tight ends.
Head coach at Michigan.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's crazy. Mike Leach was the last name I had on here, but he's not around to defend himself anymore, so I don't know. I could see Leach saying success is like a martini.
That's him.
For sure.
Yeah, I could see that being...
It relaxes you, and that's when you get into trouble.
Yeah, that sounds like a Mike Leach type of
thing.
Total
Leach.
Yeah, you know, it's not a criticism of whoever used this or whatever.
Well,
it's just
the fact that the list is all people who have a reputation for
drinking.
Enjoying an occasional beverage or seven.
I miss all the fat NFL coaches there used to be. Guys that looked like... there were more guys that looked like Dave. You know, like Dayball looks like he enjoys a beer or seven.
Not anymore. He looks really good now.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he got all trimmed up.
He looks way more trimmed than he... I think he's still working on it, too, because they showed the trimmed up pictures of Dayball during training camp.
Yeah.
I'm like, he didn't trim up that much. And then they show him... They played the Cowboys on Thursday last week. I'm like, you can barely recognize Dayball. He's coloring his beard, too. He's coloring his beard. I'd be nervous if I was Mrs. Dayball, man.
Like, has there been a non-fit head coach hired of the... These young guys all look like... They don't look like D'Amico, but they're all
who's
like...
Who's the last fatty hired as a head coach in the NFL?
I mean, you can't really say... like, the former players that are coaches tend to be, like, bigger dudes, but not necessarily...
Like Antonio Pierce is heavier than he was as a player, but he's not out of shape, I don't think.
I'm sure there's somebody that we're forgetting that's an obvious one.
Yeah.
Jim Harbaugh in great shape. Dan Quinn, maybe, I guess, is like a guy that looks like a little bit more... I don't know.
Quinn's in good shape, I'm pretty sure.
You look at, like, the coaching hires from this year. I don't know, there's a fatty in the bunch.
Yeah.
You got Harbaugh, Antonio Pierce,
yep.
Dave Canales,
yep.
Dan Quinn, Gerard Mayo, Mike McDonald... Raheem Morris, Brian Callahan, Mike McDonald. This is all... These guys are all... Yeah. It's disappointing. Man, that's probably why Belichick didn't get his job.
He's fat.
He needs to get on the Ozempic.
Trim
yourself up, man.
Yeah, man. That's it. Yeah, don't let your 24-year-old girlfriend let you get complacent, man. All right? She can find a 72-year-old anywhere, all right? All right, 9 o'clock hour. Penalties. D'Amico Ryan's on his coach's show. We're going to hit penalties one more time. If we've got to hit him again next week, I think I might take the week off. So Texans, reduce the amount of penalties. You hear from D'Amico Ryan's on his coach's show talking about looking for the Texans to cut down on penalties. What's the story this week, D'Amico? We'll talk about that coming up next.